I feel like my sermon this morning has been this long evolutionary track over the course of the week. Up until right this morning, I had another idea pop into my head about something, and so it's going to be this real odd collection of things, and we will see how it goes. Faith is being confident in what we hope for and being certain of what we cannot see. You guys to say that with me this morning. Faith is being confident of what we hope for, being certain of what we cannot see. With me, please. Faith is being confident in what we hope for and certain in what we cannot see. I want that to resonate with us this morning over the course of the next few minutes. But first, I want to talk about baseball. Pitchers and catchers, how many days, Randy? We're about a week away, aren't we? Gives me chills. First, I want to go back to a game a couple years ago. It was, what was the date? August 23rd, 2011. Cameron, who's not here this morning, went with me and a couple friends, and we went to Cleveland. There was a doubleheader. The Indians were playing the Mariners. And it's easy to remember what day the game was because we were sitting in the front row of the upper deck. And in the third inning, all of a sudden, the entire section started to kind of sway. And it was the weirdest feeling. Everybody started looking around at each other. And there was a little panic on some people's faces. Now, it was a group of guys that were with us, young guys, and so we just all looked at each other like, oh, that's weird. Well, some of the people with children started, like, fleeing to the exits. I mean, it was disjointed enough to kind of unnerve everyone. Well, we find out, luckily we have phones, and so we're like, oh, what's going on Facebook? Oh, there was an earthquake in Virginia, and it shook all the way to Cleveland, and it was the first time I'd ever been in an earthquake, which has nothing at all to do with what I want to talk about this morning. But it was a fun fact. Another fun fact about the game, Cameron's not here to verify this, so I can say whatever I want to, he won't, but he'll back me up. It was one of the sparsest games if there were 2,000 people in the crowd, I would have been amazed. It was a makeup game from a previous date, and so you could trade your ticket in and go to any game, and it was like a 1 or 2 o'clock game, or I don't know, maybe it was a noon game. It's probably a noon game, so only people with, you know, not real jobs could go, and so I don't know what that says about Cameron and I, but we were there. But there was no one there, which I always remember that experience because it was so strange. And actually, Randy remembers this. Shin Soo Chu hit a walk-off home run, and it was like, so it was a real exciting game, and you hear like this smattering of claps over this like cavernous, empty stadium. And I was thinking about that this week because I was actually drawn to a game that happened the year before last in 2015. If you remember in Baltimore, they had those riots going on, and Major League Baseball made the unprecedented move. The White Sox were in town to play games, and so they actually played a game during the day and didn't let anybody in. So it was an official game, but the attendance was zero. The only people that were there were a couple scouts that they let in, and that was it. You can go and watch a couple of the highlights. It's the most bizarre thing, because any athlete that I've ever talked to, they feed off of the crowd. Like even in baseball, which is not quite as like an emotional game like basketball or football, but everybody just, they feed off of the crowd. And so I wonder how weird it must have been, because there was a couple home runs hit in the first inning, jacked the home run, and you hear nobody but your buddies clapping in your dugout. It must have been such a bizarre feeling. And I started thinking about that this week, because I started thinking, you know, in a lot of ways, that's kind of how life feels sometimes. I don't know about for you, but for me, life feels that way. Like we're performing life in an empty stadium. Like we kind of feel sometimes like we're just all alone. I mean, every once in a while, we may feel like there's somebody out there telling us to hang in there or keep it up. I mean, that's one of the reasons we come together on Sundays, to be together, just to kind of encourage each other and to be that person. But I don't know about you, but sometimes we leave this place, and it's Wednesday, it's the middle of the week, and I haven't seen all my brothers and sisters for a while, and maybe some things are going on in my life that's struggling, or I'm just caught up in the mundaneness of life. Sometimes it's not anything, you know, extravagant, it's just life. And I just feel like I'm performing in this empty stadium, like there's nobody there, like God is kind of watching from afar just to see how I'm going to do. And it feels lonely, isolated, difficult, kind of like you can fill in the blank there. But I want us to think about this morning. Faith is being confident in what we hope for and being certain of what we cannot see. When I read the words of Romans chapter 1 and verse 16, I'm going to give you a lot of just the word this morning to wrestle with. When I read the words of Romans 1:16, I end up with a couple different kind of emotions that come. Paul says, I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Jesus because it's the power of God for the salvation of everyone who believes. And I feel like if there was ever a black preacher moment for Paul, it was this. Like, you can just hear it full of emotion and some of those great African-American preachers that just really bring the emotion to that. I'm just not able to bring. But if there's a moment, it's this moment in Paul. I'm not ashamed of the gospel because it's the power of salvation. And it leaves me feeling convicted on the one hand, but on the other hand, it makes me feel a little bit unnerved because I start to ask myself, is that really true for me? I mean, can I sing that song? Can I say that statement that I'm not ashamed of the gospel because it's the power of salvation? I mean, you talk about a powerful statement. And then I think about the words of Jesus in Matthew chapter 16, beginning in verse 24, where Jesus says, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. Whoever wants to save their life will lose it. Whoever wants to lose their life for me will find it. What good will it be for someone to gain the whole world yet forfeit their soul? Or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul? For the Son of Man is going to come in his Father's glory and with the angels, and then he will reward each person to what they've done. I mean, that is a heavy, heavy statement. In the midst of what seems like life, in the midst of this cavernous, open, empty stadium sometimes, to hear those words, deny yourself, take up your cross, follow him, that's heavy stuff. And you just can't help but wonder if that's real. Like, is that real life? Are we fully invested in that? Can we say that about our faith? Or is it just kind of lip service? Because those words, that idea of denying ourselves, you can't really go lightly with that. To take up our cross, and the Gospels go on to give us an accounting of what exactly the cross meant to Christ. It seems to me that the Gospel is about capturing our hearts and dreams and imaginations. The word that the New Testament uses so much is transformation, that we're to be transformed, changed, different. Denying yourself will no doubt do that. And if we do that, inevitably, we have to ask ourselves the question, does that describe me? Am I denying myself? Does that describe our congregation of brothers and sisters in Christ? Is this the faith that we've beckoned to? That we've been caught up in this different imagination, this different world? Because inevitably, you're going to stick out. You're going to look differently than everybody else. After Paul says that in verse 16 and verse 17, he says, for in the gospel a righteousness from God is revealed, a righteousness that is by faith from first to last, just as it is written, the righteous will live by faith. Our word this morning is faith. Paul echoes those words from the Old Testament. The righteous will live by faith. And so we're confronted this morning with what is really a deep, complicated, complex concept of faith. And the question that I want you to ask of yourselves this morning, am I living by faith? Am I living by faith? Do I take step by step making decisions by faith? Is my financial decisions for the future rooted in my faith? Is the decisions of how I raise my children rooted in faith? Is the decisions of how I conduct myself at my job rooted in faith? Because there's so many other options out there to kind of guide us in our thinking and our behaviors. But the Hebrew writer says faith is being confident in what we hope for, being certain of what we do not see. There will be times where we look differently than the people who don't know Jesus, who haven't embraced the gospel. The Bible says that over and over again. It's inevitable. Our lives will look differently than those who don't know him. Paul says in 1 Corinthians that The message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to those who are being saved, it's the power of God. I mean, that's kind of an inevitable impasse, that at some point people are going to look at you who don't know Jesus and go, that doesn't make any sense, and you're going to go, yep, it doesn't. It's Jesus. It's the gospel. It's different. It's a different world. It's a different life. There are going to be times when we stick out like a sore thumb amidst all the others. And our teenagers, our young people, have to start being told that message among our brothers and sisters in Christ. Because when you're a teenager and an adolescent, what you want more than anything else is not to stick out. I mean, you think you do, but really you don't. You want to conform. You want to just, can't we all just get along kind of thing. And the message of Christ is, yeah, that's what we want too, but there are going to be times where you just can't. Because the message of the cross is foolishness to those who don't understand it. And the thing that I want you to think about and consider this morning is that if we're not sticking out, if we're not different, if we don't look different or do things differently because of our faith, then we're probably doing it wrong. I mean, the whole message of the New Testament is we don't fit in this world, that we're here to proclaim a different kind of kingdom, a different kind of life. And if people can't see that in us and hear that in our message, we're probably doing it wrong. It's difficult to talk about faith without eventually landing in Hebrews chapter 11. And so we're going to camp out here for a few minutes, because it seemed when we had chosen the topic of faith that Hebrews 11 would be our text. Faith is confidence in what we hope for. Assurance of what we do not see. This is what the ancients were commended for. For by faith we understand that the universe was formed at God's command, so that what is seen was not made out of what was visible. By faith Abel brought God a better sacrifice or offering than Cain did. By faith he was commended as righteous when God spoke well of his offering. And by faith Abel still speaks even though he's dead. By faith Enoch was taken from this life, so that he did not experience death. He could not be found because God had taken him away. For before he was taken, he was commended as one who pleased God. And without faith, it's impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. The Hebrew writer in the early portions of chapter 11 pulls no punches. He says, hey, guess what? Faith is important. No, it's essential. No, it's impossible to please God if you don't have faith. Confidence, what we hope for. Assurance of what we do not see. And then the Hebrew writer from this point on goes on and gives us kind of a tour of the Israelite history, of the examples of faith who have come before us. Noah built an ark. By faith, Abraham waited to receive an heir and go to a land that was strange and foreign, just following only God's promise. By faith, Isaac and Jacob obeyed God. By faith, Moses' parents put him in the water. By faith, Moses led the people through the Red Sea. By faith, the walls of Jericho came down. By faith, Rahab welcomed the spies and helped out the unfolding of God's plan there. And then he gets to towards the end of the chapter in verse 32, and he says, what more shall I say? I don't have time to tell you about Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah and David and Samuel and the prophets who, and he goes on and tells us what the power of faith is. Through faith, they conquered kingdoms. They administered justice. They gained what was promised. They shut the mouths of lions. They quenched the fury of the flames. They escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned to strength, and who became powerful in battle and routed foreign armies. Women received back their dead, raised to life again. There were others who were tortured, refusing to be released so that they might gain an even better resurrection. Some faced jeers and flogging, even chains and imprisonment. They were put to death by stoning. They were sawed in two. They were killed by the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, destitute, persecuted, mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and mountains, living in caves and holes in the ground. These were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised. Since God had planned something better for us, so that only together with us would they be made perfect. This text has so much to say about faith. It first of all affirms the power of faith. The power of faith. What can we do by faith? It brings to mind Jesus' teaching that if you have faith just as small as a mustard seed, you can move a mountain. And of course, all of us who gather and profess our faith should be looking at each other going, why aren't there any mountains being moved? There is such an incredible power at our fingertips with our faith that if we just sell out to God and say, I'm not going to get caught up in the worries of this world. I'm not going to get caught up in all the things that this world offers. And they are intoxicating, aren't they? Big nice houses, big fancy cars, safety, security, on and on and on we could go. And the Christian says, my mind is on something I cannot see. I'm confident of and assured of things that I don't yet appreciate. It's no wonder that Paul says in Philippians, I can do all things through Christ, which gives me the strength. I mean, if you read through this list of Hebrews and get to the end, that should be our reaction, right? Well, then we can do anything. Conquer kingdoms, overwhelm the fury of flames, escape the edge of sword. They confronted kings. They overcame nature. They battled armies. And so isn't it ironic how many times we sit here and go, I don't know what we're going to do. I don't know how we're going to get over this obstacle or hop over this difficulty or whatever it is. Where is your faith? Jesus asked Peter. Where's your faith? But faith isn't all about the power. There's another part of this text which is a little bit more difficult to read. It tells us that there is a cost to faith. That these great stories of men and women of the past, wasn't these great triumphant moments like at the end of a movie where everything works out. Instead, there is a great price to pay. Some were put to death by stoning. Some were sawed in two. Some were killed by the sword. When you aren't fully home here, you will inevitably be challenged or have to challenge the power brokers of this world, and that doesn't usually go well for those who aren't in control or power. The whole message of Hebrews is that there is something bigger that we're a part of. That there is something that we cannot see or feel or touch at this very moment, but our hope is, our faith is, that God is in control, that God will oversee. I thought it would be helpful this morning to maybe hear a voice of faith, because we're eventually going to get to the beginning of Hebrews chapter 12 in just a minute, which is going to remind us that, yeah, it may feel like we're challenging and unfolding our lives in an empty arena, but Hebrews chapter 12 is going to tell us, no, there's plenty of folks in the crowd. There are plenty of people rooting you on. There are plenty of people among us who are great examples of faith, and I know of no one better, at least for the moment, than is in this video. So let's watch this video. Some of you have seen it before. being confident what you hope for, certain of things that you cannot see. I love that video. I love Jason's message. You know, I talked to Jason some about being in the hospital and just talking about the people who were in beds beside him that had a lot of the same things going on, who didn't have a faith, and how incredibly difficult's not even a strong enough word, how impossible it was for them to overcome what had happened to them. Jason, I think most of you know, is going to be heading down to Winterfest with his mom this week and is going to share a few minutes of his testimony with all these teenagers. And we need more people. Now, not everybody's going to be in that situation to share their faith, but it sure makes the things that we deal with and the challenges that we have to overcome, it sure makes them, I don't know, a little bit more in perspective. I thought about sharing with you this as well from another one of our members who felt compelled to write this a couple weeks ago. I recently found out something about J.K. Rowling's Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban that I had suspected, but I didn't know for sure. The story features demons known as Dementors. They attack by drawing out all the happiness and joy, leaving the victim with only pain and darkness. The only defense is the Patronus charm, an avatar created by the caster's most pleasant memories. This is a perfect description of chronic depression. Those of us who suffer from the condition can easily imagine the dark demon sucking every bit of pleasure and joy from life. Not surprising, the idea for the Dementors came from Rowling's own bout with depression. I was sitting at the grocery last week when I was in a very down mood. I forgot exactly what I was thinking, but it was along the lines of feeling abandoned. Ironically, I was sitting in a truck that a person from church had loaned me because I was without a car. In this case, my Patronus was a red 2001 Ford Ranger. Sweet truck, by the way. Let's not forget that I'm living in a nice, quiet apartment thanks to the help I receive from my friends at church. Maybe I don't see the dark wraiths of depression coming to attack me. That's probably because they're hiding inside me. There's no magic spell to drive them away except to think of the blessings that God has given me. Whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Thank you, Deb, for your thoughts and reminder and encouragement of faith. There is a stadium of people surrounding us. Sometimes they are difficult to hear and feel. Listen to the words in the middle of Hebrews. I skipped over verses 13 to 16. All these people were still living by faith when they died. Like, by the way, if I die anytime soon, if you could just read that about me, like, I would feel okay, right? All of these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance, admiring that they were foreigners and strangers on earth. People who say such things show that they're looking for a country of their own. If they had been thinking of the country they had left, they would have had an opportunity to return. Instead, they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. In 2 Corinthians 5, verse 7, Paul says that we live by faith, not by sight. Live by faith, not by sight. I think a lot of times I live by sight. I live by logic. I live by reason. I try to figure things out. And the people that I know who have had the most faith, who have just seemed to have the most passionate relationship with Christ, they seem to be the most irrational of all. They make the most rash decisions. And I'm convinced it's because they've drilled their relationship with God so deep that they live by faith and not by sight. Before I got up here, we sang the song, "He's Got the Whole World in His Hands." Brian's right. I was wondering if we'd sang that song before. I know everybody, for the most part, knows it, but it's been a long time since I've even thought of that song. It's interesting the journey I take over the course of a week thinking about a sermon, some of these things that pop in out of my head. I'm guessing most of you don't know this. I certainly didn't. It was first published in a paperback hymnal called Spiritual Triumph, Old and New, in 1927. And the song has been, as all of you know, recorded and re-recorded and released in all kinds of different things. But it was a little young man named Laurie London who really made the song popular in 1958. He was a young English singer. It was his really only his big hit. And it was a gospel song, as you can clearly tell by the message. It actually hit number one on the Billboard Hot 100, which, for a little reference, number one on the list this week is Ed Sheeran, Shape of You. So you can imagine how we've gone and traversed in our culture and pop music. It's the only time, it was the first and it's the only time since that a gospel song has been number one on a pop chart in the United States. It's something about that lyric, something about that song resonates with our culture. He's got the whole world in his hands. They're part profession and part statement of trust. And we probably sing that song differently depending on where our hearts and lives are. There are probably times where we sing the song, I think he's got the whole world in his hands. And then in a more distraught moment, there may be times when we sing, I hope that he has the whole world in his hands. There are probably moments of just pure doubt and difficulty where we sing, it sure doesn't look like he has the whole world in his hands. At the core of saying he's got the whole world in his hands is the idea of being confident of what we hope for, certain of what we do not see. As Christians, we never profess that, hey, clearly you can see God's in control, everything's going just smoothly, right? But we can't say that. There's so much disease, there's so much sickness and death and war and violence and internal turmoil and all the things that we could spend all this time talking about. Faith is not about seeing that everything's going to work out in front of us. Faith is about hoping, being certain that there is a God who has the whole world in his hands. He's got your whole world in his hands like he has mine. Hebrews chapter 12 says, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. Let us run with perseverance the race marked out before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such oppression from sinners, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. I've always felt like this was one of the greatest pep speeches in the whole Bible. Like, how could you not get excited when you have this big buildup and he gives you all, it's kind of like walking through a school hallway where it's got all the famous alumnus jerseys and sports and whatever famous people that have gone through there. And the idea is to encourage you and be excited for you because as a member of this school, you're part of that. And that's basically what the Hebrew writer does is he says, you're a part of this family. You're a part of this faith of Abraham and Moses and Elijah and all these great moments of faith that we read about in the Old Testament. The writer is saying, you're part of that too. You have the same power at your fingertips that they did. All of us do. And so the question that we are left with this morning, do you live by faith or do you live by sight? What's the guiding ethic in your life? Are you sold out for Christ? Do you wake up every morning and ask yourself, how am I going to serve the Lord today? Not what's on store at work, or how am I going to deal with my kids, or how am I going to deal with whatever. But do we start every day and say, God, where are you calling me to go today? Who are you beckoning me to talk to? Who do you need me to share my faith with you, with about you? Because if we would wake up every day asking those questions, our faith will be rewarded. God will bring us to the people who need to hear his message. The problem is there's so much other stuff clouding and getting in our way. And so this week, in the weeks to come, I would challenge you to consider the ways that your faith will drive your life. Not just on Sunday when we get together and we sing the final song about being faithful. That's all fine and dandy, but that's the easy part. The difficult part is as you go Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, through another week cycle, how are we being the children of God to the people we come in contact with? I would invite you to reflect on that as we stand and sing this final song this morning about being faithful.